This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Up next, Jennifer Murez is joined by Robert Harrington, Chairman of Cardiology at Stanford University and the incoming President of the AHA. They cover addressing the chilly climate for women in cardiology.
Bob, welcome.
Thank you.
We're here today to discuss addressing the chilly climate for women in cardiology. And I want to start off by quoting, "Women in cardiology, underrepresented, underestimated, and undervalued." And this was a quote from the papers that appeared in JAMA in May of 2018. So give us your thoughts. Why is this happening? What do we need to do? Why does it matter for us as a cardiology community?
So I'll give sort of the broad viewpoint, and then maybe, Jennifer, I'll hone in on some of the things that I think are at the core of the issue. First off, we are taking care of a diverse patient population. And if we're going to take care of a diverse patient population, we ought to have a diverse workforce that cares for that patient population. We're doing science that requires us to have a diversity of thought, perspective, and opinion. And so we need scientists who are diverse in their thought, in their perspective, in their background. And so if you think about it that way, you say, for the good of the field, we need to have diversity in it. And what we have right now in cardiology is a very non-diverse field. And we're going to specifically today talk about gender. But women make up only about 15% of our cardiovascular professionals. When you think about that, you say, how could that be? And you look across the country, we have states where there are less than 10 women cardiologists. In 2019, how could this be? How are we taking care of patients in those states? How are we populating our medical school with professors in those states if we don't have balanced gender representation? So clearly underrepresented. Part of the issue I think that the JAMA paper gets at is there is a culture within cardiology that is not necessarily a friendly one to women. And so women lack mentorship, they lack opportunities, they lack support. And all of that leads to the unfortunate thing is for a field that you and I both love so much that we're not attracting talented women. And we know there are talented women who can be considered for cardiology careers. I'm an internal medicine chair, and we have in our residency program roughly 50% women, 50% men, a few more men. I think we're closer to 52, 54% men, but it's pretty close to 50-50. Our women residents and our men residents do about the same. Test scores, competencies, recommendations. Why is it then that only 20% of our cardiology fellows are now women?
Well, you know, it's a timely topic because, you know, the Me Too in healthcare just launched. Time's Up in healthcare just launched. And when I think back to my personal fellowship, I mean, it's sort of a survival. It was survival of the fittest. And it was not an environment that was truly inclusive and, you know, accommodated the unique needs of women. So what do you think we need to do as a cardiology community? How do we change the culture?
I have been increasingly well informed on this topic from some of the young women cardiologists in our own program. And one of them likes to say, we need to think about it first as an equity issue, that it's the right thing to do for the reasons that we mentioned. We need to think about it as a patient care issue, and we need to think about it as a health of the field issue. And so I've started to think from that, through those lenses, how can we do things? How can we do things differently? One's clearly awareness and the Time's Up movement which I was tweeting about, is an important one. And the women who have created that and led that need to be joined by the men in the field to be supportive. Young women cardiologists need mentors. But more than mentors, they need an environment of support. They need an environment of opportunity. You know, because you've been involved with us through the AHA and the women in science and medicine through the AHA, we need to make sure, for example, that our science committees have equal representation of men and women. And we're actually pretty good at that in the AHA. Last figures I saw were about 42%. But we have a goal to get to 50% over the next couple of years. We need to make sure that when we give awards, that there's balanced representation in terms of who's being considered for those awards. We need to make sure that when we're giving grants, that there is a way to blind to gender for who's submitting, but make sure that there's also representation of women applying and women receiving grants. So there's a lot of things I think that the Heart Association can do. The American College, which is going to deal more with the clinical side of the house, clearly has been interested in this from a diversity and inclusion perspective. They're also at work under the leadership of Pam Douglas and Kim Williams on a compensation plan set of principles coming out from the college. So I think there are things that people are doing.
You know, and I think this fits into something that Pam Douglas, Dr. Douglas, mentioned in her JAMA article. We look at the fact the IHI, Institute for Healthcare Improvement, issued the triple aim, which was really focused on the patient, right? They advocated now for the quadruple aim, where care of the provider and or the healthcare professional, us as physicians, providing joy in the workplace is just as important as improving health outcomes. And it comes to what one of your cardiologists said, we have to look at this globally. What are your thoughts? How do the average cardiology chairperson start to change the culture and also account for women and pregnancy?
We've taken this very seriously at our place, and as chair of medicine, as I look across all of the specialties, we're trying to make sure that we're not falling victim, for example, to biases. So, for example, there's good evidence, as you know, that on search committees, you have to have a certain number of people with diverse backgrounds in order to consider diverse candidates. There's a literature on this. You actually have to interview a diverse set of candidates to, if you're going to hire a diversity candidate. And it seems obvious, but people weren't doing it. So what we've done, for example, in our department is we expect a minimum percentage of women on all of our search committees. And when we're searching for leaders, we are explicit in the fact that we need to make sure that we have diversity of perspective and bring in a diverse set of candidates, including gender candidates. We need to make sure that we avoid things when possible of so-called search waivers. Oh, we don't need a search one because this person's the best. Well, how do you know that? So you want to make sure that you're not falling victim to that. And we've also gone to create some training systems. We created something with the help of an outside consultant called Making Space, which was a leadership development training specifically for younger faculty and more specifically for younger women faculty to try to expose them to opportunities for leadership training that they might not otherwise get. And we're now in our third year of doing it. We're now training men as well. I think we're up to about 40 or 50 being trained every year. A lot of it is with coaching, and now we're incorporating a bit of train the trainer. And so some of the women who went through the first time are now emerging as the training leaders to help their fellow young faculty gain that set of skills. So I think it's about providing opportunity, it's providing some resources, it's making it in the value system of the department or the institution, making it something that is shown to be important.
I think before we end, sexual harassment in the workplace, especially in the healthcare system, is real. What do we do about it? What are some solutions? Where do we begin?
First off, I'll go on record as saying zero tolerance needs to be an important part of that. A culture that has systems by which things can be reported quickly and without fear of retribution and confidentially, if and when appropriate, needs to be put in place. And people need to know about it. In the state of California, for example, anyone who manages or supervises people has to, in the workplace, has to undergo mandatory sexual harassment training on a regular basis. And so zero tolerance, systems to address, and systems that act. People need to understand that there are serious consequences for this, be they within the institution or even legal implications. And all tools need to be employed to just let people know that we have a safe work environment that's inclusive and does not tolerate anything less than that.
So you're an optimist. I think I'm an optimist. So you think the future's bright. We are making inroads.
I think I'm an optimist, and you and I have talked about this. We both have millennial children. I'm optimistic in part because I think the next generation is more inclusive in their viewpoints than our generation. And I have a lot of optimism for the future because of young people.
Thank you, Dr. Harrington. I think that next time we meet, hopefully we will say the chilly climate is no longer chilly, and we have fostered a culture of dignity and respect and inclusion where women are seen as equal contributors to advancing the field of cardiovascular care. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axel.